Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later in the episode.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team. It's every day. I'm Doug Norrie, owner-operator at DFSR.com. Have you covered for all your DFS needs for NBA, NHL as well. Baseball coming right down the pike, around the corner, however you want to say, something that's coming soon, all there on DFSR.com, DFS and betting needs, so go check that out. Flying solo again here today on the podcast, no Adam Armbrecht. He's dealing with some family stuff, obviously, that comes first, and that's going to be the priority. So a couple episodes here with Adam, no big deal. Hope everything is good in his world, and we are going to roll right along with Brooklyn Nets talk, because that is what we do. I think he'll be back again tomorrow as we kind of start to close out the week. Coming at you here right after the Brooklyn Nets go and dispatch, take care of, beat, whatever you want to say, the Trailblazers on Tuesday night. And it's just another very, very impressive win. We're going to talk about the game here, talk about some of the performances, some of the stuff I saw the Blazers try to throw at the Nets, you know, for better or for worse. Talk about some of the rotations as well. There's a lot to get into for a game that, for the most part, you know, started as an offensive onslaught from both teams, really kind of tapered near the end, but the Nets were able to hold on sort of, I don't know, not by the skin of their teeth there at the end, probably wanted to try to pull away late and just kind of weren't able to against the Blazers, kind of got into a rock fight for the last few minutes. But overall, the game ends up with another Nets win. They move to 30-14, continue to kind of just dominate no matter what the personnel is on the court for them on a game-to-game situation. Go on the road here, fly across, you know, basically, you know, fly across the country, play on the road with a shorthanded team, and walk away from a win, again, not against a slouch team here by any means. The Blazers, going into the game, 25-17, one of the top teams in the West, are going to probably make a push here toward the top of the West with LeBron and AD out for the Lakers, among some other things that are kind of going on at the top of that conference. And I hate to sound like it's old hat at this point with the Nets, but that's really just kind of where we are with this team. It kind of doesn't matter who they throw out there. Every kind of guy steps up, no matter, you know, if they need to play more minutes. There's role players that step up. We're starting to get longer looks at some of these guys in terms of guys that are coming off the bench playing longer rotations. And just, again, I just can't. I don't want to say we're getting used to it. I was fully prepared, by the way, going into this game. I was fully prepared for the Nets to kind of just take a schedule loss just because we've talked about this before. We're playing with house money at this point. It feels like, at least. And if you need to kind of dial it back for a game or two because you want to get some guys rest, or, you know, it's just kind of, that's the vagaries of the schedule. And this is kind of how, you know, we don't need to really push games to the absolute hilt in late March when we're targeting a June kind of flurry in terms of wins. So these games, you know, they're important. They're important to set culture. They're important to see, you know, what guys can do what. But if they're going to lose a game to Portland here, lose a game to Utah, look, this isn't the Nets from a couple years ago where they're scrapping and clawing for every win. We talked about this already. But they go into this game, and by the way, the reason I thought this going in is because late on Monday, we get word that James Harden is listed questionable with a neck injury. So that neck injury stemmed from when he got knocked on the game over the weekend. He goes down. It looks like it's kind of bad at the time. Looks like he gets his bell rung. Thought he might go into the concussion protocol. Ended up coming back and playing in the game and finishing and closing out the game. That one was against the Wizards. And so they give him a questionable tag on Monday, and I kind of thought that was a signal that they planned on possibly sitting him the first game. Maybe give him an excuse, maybe say the neck was an issue, why push it? First game of the road trip, got 3 games in 4 days when it comes to, excuse me, 3 games in 5 days? I can't do my math. No, 4 days. 3 games in 4 days. And, you know, why push it with him? He's been playing crazy minutes. We talked about this on the last podcast, how Harden has played the most minutes in the NBA since the trade went down back in January. He leads the entire NBA. By the way, that's after tonight. That number is not going to have been dialed back at all. So we didn't really get a respite on the minutes. But going into the game, I'm thinking, okay, well, they give him the questionable tag. There's a chance they just sit him out. You know, maybe that's a nice excuse. It gives him a little chance to, once he has a questionable tag on him, it has him a chance to maybe take it down to the wire with the decision making about whether he's going to play. Feels like almost assured that he was going to sit one end of the back-to-back here, whether it was going to be Portland or Utah. Now, I'm recording this right after the game, against Portland, so they haven't come out with an official word on that. I wouldn't be shocked to hear that really soon, that if even Nash did something in his presser that said he planned on sitting him against the game against Utah. If they play him against Utah, that means there's just not even a single concern in the world with the minutes. But I don't think that's going to be the case, especially now they get this win over Portland. I don't think that they feel like they probably need to push it, but famous last words, because this guy continues to play crazy minutes. So I kind of thought going into the game, the Nets might say, you know what, we can afford to have some nice things here. We don't need to go crazy with it. You know, we've done a good job in the short term dealing with some of these injuries, still kind of winning. We're going to end up near the top of the East almost no matter what happens here down the stretch. Do we need to push James Harden? Probably not. But then he goes out, and I don't know if he had to test it during warm-up, so they just thought, well, he just is okay. But they do end up deciding to play him. I thought Gotham Rec, who's awesome on Twitter, had a great tweet before the game. It was before the game, where he's talking about the Nets' thought process around injuries, and he says, I'm just going to read this. It's a great tweet. He said, Kevin Durant, if it was the playoffs, he'd be back soon, but it's not, so we'll be cautious. Blake Griffin, he's ramping up, maybe 1 minute more each week, baby steps. James Harden, well, his head is partially detached from his body, but we'll run him through warm-ups. He's a game-time decision, which I thought was, I got a chuckle from it. I thought that was a great way to put it, and clearly is sort of, you know, it's a, kind of one of those things you laugh awkwardly at, because it's like not totally true, but for all the kid gloves that the Nets have had with basically every player on the team, Claxton minute watch, right, like on his way back. Durant hasn't played in forever because of the calf issue, which we're still unclear what it is. Griffin, he's got to ramp it back up. Kyrie's got the 3 days off. I know it's not injury, it's a personal matter, so I'm not going to put that into the injury stuff, but they have clearly, you know, have no problem just in having him not play. And it's like, James Harden, you're going to play marathon style minutes for the course of a year. Go ahead. You know, your head's barely attached to your body. Okay. That's fine. You know, you're fine. Just, you know, keep it, make sure it just kind of continues to stay propped up under the top of your neck, and we should be good, and just go out and play 40 minutes and get the job done. So that does seem to be the theme with the Nets season this season, when it comes to, you know, they have Harden now, and they have not dialed it back at all with his minutes. That ended up being the case again against the Blazers here tonight. So anyway, he goes in with a questionable tag, doesn't end up mattering. He ends up playing, obviously runs at a crazy amount, 40 minutes as well, and then it wasn't all that efficient from the field, still is struggling from the three-point line over the course of the last few games, but he made it up by getting to the free throw line a ton. And it was just kind of one of your vintage James Harden like performances when it was all said and done. 25 points, 17 assists, which feels nuts. I rarely ever watch the box score during this stuff, so I knew the assist numbers were probably pretty high. Did not think they were trending toward 20. 7 rebounds. Only go 7 for 24 from the field. But like I said, with the efficiency stuff, you can kind of make up for it on the back end if you're getting to the line this many times and being pretty efficient there. So a game without Kyrie, a game without Harden, without like maybe like that clear number two score, you're going to expect high usage but a decrease in efficiency. That's just the way it's going to be. It was definitely what the Blazers' plan was in terms of a defensive set against him and what they wanted to do to kind of guard him. But in the end, Harden does play, gets the win. We're going to talk about that in a second. I want to talk about some of the schemes that it looked like the Blazers were throwing at him. I want to talk about some of these other role players. Really impressive with the bench performance here for the Nets tonight against the Blazers. Had to be really feeling good about what they got there. And we'll talk about some of these other games as well. One other thing I wanted to mention here about James Harden, though, just in terms of those assist numbers, third game in the last week, basically the last week, we'll call it 8 days, third game with 15 or more assists for James Harden. The other two, he had 8 and 9, so I don't know what he was doing dogging it during those games that he wasn't able to do it. But his assist numbers over the last week, 17 against the Blazers, 8, 9, then 15 against the Pacers, 15 against the Knicks as well. For all of that, it was very easy this week to give James Harden the ultra player of the week. He's playing with a lot of joy. He's playing with a lot of passion right now. It's awesome to see. He knows the team is on his back, especially in situations like this. He's been used to this before. He's had carry teams in the past. Probably didn't think he was going to have to do it this much right now here with the Nets with these other guys. But again, this guy, he just does every single thing you want him to see, playing like he's enjoying it, playing like he's got that crazy love for the game as well. Just like Michelob Ultra, right now Michelob Ultra, it's only worth it if you enjoy it just like James Harden is enjoying playing basketball. 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. Joy creates success. Enjoyment isn't the end game. It's the whole game. James Harden, the Ultra Player of the Week. Are you happy because you win, or do you win because you're happy? Also, as you know, March Madness has returned. It's in full swing right now, and Paramount Plus has the games you don't want to miss. You can watch CBS games live on Paramount Plus, including the Final Four and National Championship game, which is coming on April 5th. Paramount Plus is also the home to year-round sports, including the Masters, tradition like unlike any other, PGA Championship, UEFA Champions League, and Europa League, NFL, and more. Plus, you get breaking news, expert picks, and highlights from all your favorite teams with the CBS Sports HQ, a 24/7 sports news network. Paramount Plus, absolute awesome streaming service. Got to get in on it. Plus, a bunch of shows, too, as well. If you're into the Star Trek universe, got to get over there for Paramount Plus. Has all that stuff. Like I said, March Madness. You can follow along with your bracket. You get those CBS games as well. Visit ParamountPlus.com before March 31st to receive a free one-month trial of Paramount Plus. That's ParamountPlus.com, and you're going to receive a one-month free trial of Paramount Plus at ParamountPlus.com. All right, so the Nets are without Kyrie Irving in this game. They end up starting Bruce, a pretty predictable starting lineup, all things considered. It's Harden, it's Bruce Brown, it's Joe Harris, it's Jeff Green, and it's DeAndre Jordan. Wasn't as surprised by that. Thought we might see a Tyler Johnson start in there to get a little secondary ball handling with this first unit, maybe a little more offensive pop, but they ended up not doing that. And James Harden has proven in the past that he doesn't really need to play with another ball handler. I think most other teams probably wouldn't feel comfortable with this kind of setup, because really when you look down at the rest of that starting five, you really don't get much in the way of playmaking at all. You get a lot of hustle, you get a lot of grit, you get those short rolls from Bruce Brown, you get obviously, you know, lights out three-point shooting from Joe Harris, you kind of get a little Swiss Army knife stuff from Jeff Green as well. But you don't have a guy that you can really put the ball in his hands for any real period of time and expect him to create his own shot. So that was like the only reason I thought we might see a TJ start, but we don't. And then early, you could tell the Blazers, their plan with Harden was, one, they were going to throw different defensive looks at him kind of each time up the court. It was a little Robert Covington to start. It's a lot of Derrick Jones Jr. They wanted to get that length sort of in front of him. Harden was able to cook him a couple times, although I still thought the idea behind it was correct, to be able to slow him down a little bit with the Derrick Jones Jr. length. So they threw him at him. At times they try to get the switch on to Lillard when they could. CJ was a guy they threw at him a couple times. They really, if you watch this part, the first part of the game, it was pretty clear that the Blazers didn't want him to get comfortable with whatever the defensive assignment was going to be. And it wasn't like a transition cross-matching thing. Like, this was, different guys at different times. I tracked him more in the first quarter. It was definitely more DJJ than anybody else. But like I said, he did see the Covington stuff, and then they did work at it. They tried to get him onto the other guards. But it's one of those things, like, sometimes people don't understand at this point about the NBA that, teams aren't just going to line up your point guard against their point guard. Like, I think most fans, sort of us, are getting to understand that at this point. But that's just not what happens in the traditional NBA now. You're going to throw defensive you're going to throw your best defenders at the best, your best, the other team's best player for sure, anytime you're able to do it. And for, as good as Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum are, they're not known for the defensive prowess. These are offensive first guards through and through. That's why they brought in guys like Rocco and Jones to give them some of that length, give them that switchability, not to take the onus, especially with elite guards, off of Dame and CJ, so that they didn't have to pick up those crazy defensive assignments on the other end, which they're going to be underdogs to be able to stop anyway. So that's what they threw at Harden early. And I, you know, the Nets were pretty competent with what they were trying to do. It's a lot of Harden on ball. It's him getting into the lane. A few lob stuff to DJ early, not a ton. They were able to kind of clamp down on that. But for the most part, the offense ran basically how you think it would. Running Joe Harris off some screens. He actually put the ball on the deck more this game than he usually does, probably because he just had to, the way that the offense was kind of functioning. But the offense in general for this first unit, yeah, like I said, operated the way you would have thought it would. A lot of scoring in that first quarter, 41-37 when it was all said and done. Felt like the Blazers couldn't miss. And the guy that was really killing them early, and really kind of the whole game, and it took me, you know, what, 15 minutes into this podcast to talk about this, 16 minutes, I guess, is Enes Kanter. So the Nets really haven't had a lot of trouble lately with other teams. They've had some, but not like these crazy huge games like we'd sometimes see in the past where opposing centers would just put the absolute blitz on them, because they were undersized, because it was kind of a lackadaisical approach on the interior, especially when it came to rebounding, especially on the offensive glass. DJ had kind of shored up a decent amount of that. We've got Claxton coming in off the bench, that they're kind of trending a little bigger, especially when they're playing Claxton and Griffin together. But man, early on, Kanter was just brutalizing them. I think at the end of the first quarter, yeah, let me just look. I took a note on this. He, at the end of the first quarter, he was 13-8-3. That's through the first 12, he played the entire first 12 minutes. Oh my God. I mean, it was just every single time, offensive rebound put back into the post with an easy bucket. Like, even had the assist because they were trying to feed him in the post so much that at times he was just able to pass out of it and get a couple dimes that way. And he was just murdering them. And this, it was kind of like a throwback performance for the Nets on the interior defense side, because I mean, I guess it has happened a little bit, but not as much recently. One, because the Nets are winning a lot of these games, so other teams really can't like overplay their centers, because if you don't have a center that can switch defensively, there's kind of a lot of times no point, and unless they're like an elite offensive guy, sometimes there's not a ton of point to keep him out there, because the Nets are just going to carve you up on offense. But Kanter, they were able to keep on because he was such a plus on the offensive end that they were able to play him a ton of minutes, and that's not a lot of times what they want to do with him. If you look at his minutes from previous games, he hadn't been playing all that much, because there's definitely going to be matchups where it's just not an advantage for them to have him on the court. Not against the Nets, baby. 40 minutes, 19 points, 19 rebounds. Luckily, they were able to stop the scoring a little bit for him, but not the rebounding. It was just all game, brutalizing him. Ended up with 10 offensive rebounds against this team. Some of that's not going to be put on DJ. DJ was getting run over the coals in terms of Twitter tonight. Rightfully so. It was looking pretty darn bad for him, because he wasn't able to keep Kanter off the glass. He wasn't able to stop any of the guards in the lane who would just be able to get past him and then essentially be able to pass out of the lane against the defensive side that he already missed. So everyone came to help DJ when the guys got inside, and then they were able to just, that's why we saw a ton of open threes for some of these guys tonight, especially the wings, is because it's not so much that their defenders were losing them, it's that they kind of had to kind of collapse a little bit because DJ was just having problems there in terms of a defensive assignment. But sometimes it just doesn't take much except to look at an opposing player's early line and say, you know, it's just not working here. When Enes Kanter is able to play 40 minutes and grab 19 rebounds, 10 of them on the offensive glass, you don't need to be a basketball expert to know something has gone horribly wrong here, and they're just having all kinds of trouble stopping it. It's not all DJ's fault. He only played 20 minutes of this game, but these are the games where if you're going to have a big offensive center that's going to play on the low block, and he's just going to, like, kind of just take over. Like, those are the only situations where DJ can actually play. We talked about this in the last podcast, was that what are the situations that DeAndre Jordan's going to play a lot in? All right, big offensive centers that he can muscle down on the block and not get totally overrun by. Except that in this game, Enes Kanter basically overran him on the interior. So if that's going to happen, then what is DeAndre, like, what is DeAndre Jordan doing in the game? And I, you know, Nash, to his credit, was able to sort of figure this out early and then ended up not playing him all that much. Because if you're like, well, if Enes Kanter is just going to do it anyway, then we might as well just get a lot of minutes at a bigger switchable bigs, i.e. Nick Claxton in this game, who ends up playing 22 minutes. So the beginning part of this game, luckily, Brooklyn was able to keep pace in terms of the scoring. Luckily, they were able, just because, like, you know, the will of James Harden to be able to get to the line, they were able to knock down some other open shots. Jeff Green was able to score at a decent clip in this game. He had a pretty impressive game. They were able to keep it close, but man, that Kanter thing, it was kind of like old, like I said, old school, not in the good way. Like old school, when the time of school you just don't even want to look back on, because it was like a kind of like a nightmare. Like maybe your middle school years, old school kind of thing, where Enes Kanter is just down on the block, opposing center, doing work, able to do any single thing he wants to. Richard Jefferson on the call is like, just can't stop praising the guy. And he, look, it's fair. The guy was playing really physical. He's doing everything you wanted to do, but it really kind of was also an indictment on DJ to say, look, if this is going to happen here, like, what is the plan then? Because this is the one situation where you're supposed to be able to stay on the court for, and if you can't, then it might just be kind of like starting to move on territory, especially when we talk about some of the second unit stuff that I want to talk about here coming up in a second, because the second unit comes in and really basically won the game. There's no other way to put it. The second unit won the game for the Nets. The second unit plus James Harden basically won this game for the Nets. I want to talk about that here in a second as well. First, let's talk a little bit here about Built Bar. You know Built Bar, absolute best protein bar out there on the market right now. Completely delicious. We've been telling you about this forever. You know the Locked On NBA channel just still goes crazy about this stuff when we get it in the mail. When we get I call it the Built Bar re-up. Whenever we get that low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber protein bar in the mail, it's a total bonanza there in the Locked On NBA channel. 100% covered in chocolate as well. Right now, you can get in on Built Bar Madness, where they're choosing the best flavor, and that's how confident they are with their stuff here, that they just know that they can choose flavors, or they have so many flavors to put up in the brackets, they're calling the championship, that they're going to be able to just kind of run through the field of 64 and come out with a winner. Today's matchup is cookies and cream versus coconut almond. I'm a coconut guy. I'm going coconut almond all day with that. You can get in on the action too. Visit builtbar.com or go to on Twitter @bar_built. And remember, when you go and buy something on builtbar.com, make sure you use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That's LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at builtbar.com. And check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar. And got to talk to you about our good friends over at Bet Online. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football is obviously way over, but right now we're in the throes of March Madness. NBA cranking every single night. NHL on the ice as well. Built Bar has you covered for all of your betting needs. Get in on the award shows as well. The Academy Awards coming up. They're going to have the prop bets that you need for that over there also. Real-time updated odds and props on anything you can imagine. Plus all the news scores to keep you up to date on your sports action as well. Head on over to the website betonline.ag on your tablet or mobile device and sign up today. You're going to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, but you got to use the promo code LOCKEDON to get it. Right now, go to betonline.ag, promo code LOCKEDON for that 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, so the key to this game, as it was going to be basically from the time that we heard that Kyrie Irving was not going to be able to play in this one, we already knew Shamet wasn't going to be in the game either, so that was going to be some of their sort of like, you know, scoring punch off the bench, a little bit of ball handling there as well, so they were going to be down some of the guards just going into this game. So the question was going to be, You know, not can the Nets hang when James Harden's on the court. We know this. We know what can kind of happen when Harden's leading the offense. We know what they're going to get in terms of what Harden's able to deliver just from, like, you know, all-star, superstar level talent. He's one of the best in the game. There's a reason he's up there, and deservedly so, in that MVP race. I think if it hadn't been for the other stuff in his past, he'd probably be the favorite right now for the MVP, but he's not, just because of sort of like the past is harming him a little bit more than the present when it comes to his performance. But it's like, well, what are they going to do when he's off the court? Because even if he plays crazy minutes, like he played 40 minutes in this game, there's still eight, you know, realistically you're probably thinking he plays like 37, 38. So you're thinking, okay, in a close game, there's going to be 10 minutes where he's off the court. Like, what is going to happen here? Can they just tread water during those moments? Are they going to be able to just keep their head above water, be able to either maintain a lead or keep it close when he's off the court? And man, they were just able to do it. It was crazy. They did so well tonight. So they're basically primary rotation after the starters, like I mentioned. And by the way, DJ only played 20 minutes. Bruce Brown only played 22. He got poked in the eye early, but I don't think the plan was going to play him 30 plus minutes anyway. It wasn't the eye issue. I think that's just kind of how they rolled with him. But that unit that came in was basically Tyler Johnson. Well, TLC came in first, much to, I know, many Nets fans' chagrin. TLC coming in off the bench. He ended up playing the most minutes off the bench. Thought he was functional. Missed a couple open threes, but I'm probably looking at him a little more closely than some of the other guys just because he's a much maligned presence when it comes to Nets fans these days. But he was basically the first sub in off the bench. Thought he held his own defensively pretty much. Wasn't a huge drag. I mean, the last time he played, it was an epic disaster with the turnovers and just kind of like bonehead plays, missing shots. It was really kind of bottom of the barrel stuff where I wasn't sure we were going to see him again. But I thought he was competent in this game. But that group was basically TLC, TJ, he plays 23 minutes. Blake Griffin, we get 19 minutes out of him, so a little bit of an increase there. And then Nick Claxton. And that group, not TLC, but the other three, TJ, Claxton, and Griffin, were all plus for this game. They played really, really, really well. TJ, again, he's a kind of, I'm not going to call him a bulldog because that implies like a lot of strength. But he hounds you on defense. Like, he's very active on defense still. He's able to kind of get into switches. He's been able to keep his guy in front of him. But then what the Blazers kept doing, though, much to, I know, Nets fans' delight, is they kept trying to get, either they were working overtime on it or the Nets were just allowing it to happen, was to get Claxton into these switches on the two guards. And man, he was up for it every time with this around the perimeter. Just every game that goes by is more and more proof that Nick Claxton can stay on the court in closing minutes because he is able to switch on even to the other team's best offensive guard players. We saw this with Beal. We saw it with Westbrook. Now we see it again with CJ McCollum and Dame Lillard. They tried all the time in that fourth quarter to get him into a switch around the perimeter, and almost every time, Claxton either stayed in front of them or completely altered the shot in the lane. It was awesome. Awesome. Awesome stuff by Claxton. He was one of the key reasons, especially on defense, that they were able to really slow down the Blazers like late in the game, because again, it became very hard for them to score when he is the primary defender. And then during the game as well, we saw kind of signs of life from Blake, right? Like, a couple things. One, he hits the three-pointer. He's got to hit the open ones. And he's going to always have them. Like, if he's going to hang around the perimeter, the other team is just going to give him the open three. So he's got to be able to knock it down when given the opportunity. He knocked down one for two. Couple times, they kind of started defaulting to try to get him into the post. It worked. It worked twice where they were able to get on a smaller matchup. Actually, one was on a guard and one, I think, was on Melo, which isn't like a huge size advantage, though he's bulkier than Melo. But they were definitely working to try to get him down into the post. That's not really as much his game anymore, that like low block post stuff. He's more kind of like foul line extended around there, around that area. But if the timing is right and you can kind of take advantage of it, he has to be able to do that because it's just going to keep the other defenses honest. And he was able to do that as well. Was feisty on defense, kind of being active. He's still not really looking all that quick, and he's definitely not looking like the athletic version that we knew from years ago. But if he's going to kind of put in the effort, we saw him dive on the ground for a loose ball as well. If the effort's going to be there, and he's going to be able to not get totally brutalized on some of the stuff in the post when he gets called on to do it, then I think that he's going to be mostly a plus player. That was like some of my concern, was that he was just going to be I just was concerned you weren't going to get enough from him on either end. But I thought tonight, at least, we were able to get a good functional version of him. But that group that was able to kind of like play those minutes, those 8 minutes that Harden didn't play, and they ended up overlapping it with him as well, because they at least Claxton and TJ ended up, excuse me, TJ didn't close. Claxton ended up closing the game along with Jeff Green, Joe Harris, and Harden. But if they're going to be able to, those guys were able to, like I said, tread water enough, be plus players. TJ knocked down, he walked down one of his three-pointers. I could have sworn he knocked down two. Knocked down the one that was like a catch-and-shoot three from the corner. Ends up going 3-for-7 from the field, scores 8 points. But again, when you look down the plus-minus for those guys, Griffin +9. I can't remember if I ever said this, but Claxton +4, TJ +5. Those bench minutes ended up being so important. Because in a game where you're down so many guards, you're down functional scoring, it's really going to be James Harden or bust when it comes to like good, reliable scoring options. Then being able to get that out of them, and really the fact that they were able to dial it all up on defense too. Like the defensive stuff for the Nets has been so important for them, where they really kind of just start clamping down. I mean, they're not slapping the floor on defense like March Madness style here at this point, but they're effectively are. You can tell they're bought in to the energy that they need, for the most part, to be able to kind of handle different defensive assignments. And we really saw that from the second unit. So it was really encouraging, because they needed it. They needed those bench minutes. It was the only way they were going to win, was to have effective, like basically just net neutral minutes out of the bench. Neutral minutes was going to be probably enough. And late game, the game turned into, I mean, look, for all the scoring, it ends up 116-112. There really wasn't much scoring down the stretch here. As good as that closing unit and that other group were playing, I think they went the last 2.5 minutes, I think, with only 2 total points, something like that. Right. So at the 2:11 mark, the 2:30 mark, it was 114-111. That was when Derrick Jones dunked on that inside cut where Lillard gave him the assist, and then Jones kind of double pumped and dunked it. At that point, it's 2:30 left. That closing unit, at least for the Nets, was basically able to shut the Blazers down. Now, conversely, the Blazers did the same to the Nets. Neither team could score, because both teams basically, it was 2-1. Nets 2-1 for the Nets for the last 2.5 minutes of the game, because just neither team could score. But that's okay, you'll take that, because what they were doing on the defensive end was good enough against two elite scorers in CJ and Dame. A lot of that, like I said, had to do with Claxton and the fact that he was able to stay in front of guys. The rest of the defense was bought in terms of kind of knowing the assignments, so no one ever got caught. All those shots for the Blazers down the stretch were tough ones. None of those were easy looks. They kind of did have to force some stuff up late. But overall, ends up just being a really, really nice performance for these guys. So all in all, nice win here for the Nets. I think, like I said at the beginning, I think we probably see additional rest, maybe just a schedule loss against Utah on Wednesday. It feels like it'd be kind of criminal to run Harden out there for another 40 minutes, but like that, like I said before, they probably know. Maybe they know something we don't. Maybe they know that his body is just a superhuman, never gets tired, never gets injured body, and they've done all the tests and they feel like they can do this stuff. I do feel like we're gonna see. He deserves the rest. It's just, again, they continue to win these games. Their team efforts as well, for sure. Harden's still the engine that's making it go. He's the superstar that you can kind of put these role players around and still get functional wins against good teams. He played 40 minutes again. If you're going to give him the night off, maybe they let some of these young guys cook a little bit. I think that's just a totally fine thing. I think Nets fans have to be okay with that as well, if it's the plan, because, again, it's a marathon, not a sprint when it comes to this season, and we just can't have this guy going out there and running 40 minutes a night with the ball in his hands, you know, putting up 24 shots, getting to the line, getting his body beat up, getting to the line this many times. So if we see a rest night for Harden on Wednesday. All right, we're going to get out of here. You know how to help the show. Rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts, 5 stars or bust. Also, make sure you throw a nice little review in there. Helps put a little wind in the podcast sales. Go visit our sponsors, Michelob Ultra, Built Bar, Bet Online, Paramount Plus. Go help us out that way as well. Give us a follow on Twitter, too, at Locked On Nets. We're getting close to 1,000 Twitter followers. Maybe you'll be the 1,000th follower. That would be it'd be great for you to just, you know, mention it at family reunions. Mention it, you know, maybe during the vows of your wedding is one of the bigger moments that you've had in your life. You became our 1,000th Twitter follower. I think Adam will be back again tomorrow after the Jazz game as well. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.